Captain's private log, February 24th, 1984. Making a note of a conversation I had with Dr. Blaisby of the ornithology team. Came up to my cabin just this evening. Well, this morning. It was actually about 1 a.m. I was about to turn in. He asked if he could speak to me. I agreed, of course. Offered him a brandy. None of the regulation stuff, mind. And we set to it. Turned out he'd been having bad dreams ever since we left Sao Paulo. They dropped off a bit at Port Stanley, he said, but then they restarted as soon as we headed further south. Well, I told him not to think much of it. The sea can get in a man's mind a bit, and in funny ways. I knew a thing or two about such things. But then he told me about a dream from a couple of nights back, about a mutiny. Damn strange thing, but that same night, I'd had a dream a bit like it too. Or not a mutiny exactly, maybe an illness? I dreamt that Duff had attacked me, of all people. Someone, anyway, at least. With a boat hook. I wasn't too sure if it was me in the end that he was attacking. But he was foaming blue at the mouth, acting like a lunatic. It was a ghastly business. But the Dr. Blaisby had dreamt the same thing on the same night. Well, I'd have thought it was the drink, but he'd only had a few sips. I said best to take our mind off it and talk about other things. I asked him about his family, and it turned out that his whole family, four generations back, are whalers. His father hadn't sailed, but had been on land for a company, the Cumberland, during the fin whale boom of the 50s. Of course, those were different times. One can't approve of whaling now, and he said the same. Turns out that he knew about the old whaling station that they were planning for Griffin Island, back just before the Great War. They even tried to put a manned station out here. Not his people, mind. But record of it in the family company, he said. I knew about the cabin, of course, built on the place. I saw it last time we made landfall. Must have been a devil of a thing to build. Even harder to let it go, I should say. It made for an interesting chapter in the memoirs, I don't wonder. The history of this place. Well, then the conversation turned to the Unity Canto. I wasn't even aware that he knew about her going down around these parts. Of course, some of the specialists know about it. Crow, Giraud, well, that's all part of their job. And I think that photographer fellow, Cook, yes, he knows about it too. He's a former military man, you can always tell. Something in the bearing. They've got cool heads, those three. Anyway, Blaisby said he liked to keep abreast of things. He'd looked into it before he'd left. There'd not been much in the news about the freighter, but he'd looked her up all the same. Helmed by Tolverson, a good man by all accounts, and a good captain too. Odd to lose a ship that way, he thought, just sort of disappearing like that. Well, I beg to differ. Whether around Port Stanley has caught the best of skippers out. Best he didn't dwell on it, I said. Facts of the sea. Every vessel had to face the risk. I said it couldn't possibly have anything to do with his dream. And he said, well, that's just the thing. I can't shake the feeling that it has. That there's something waiting for us there, he said. At Griffin Island. Well, I told him that that seemed unlikely, and it was just the brandy talking, which he took well enough. And that whole time we were talking, I saw he was whittling away that rod of wood he has with him. He's mad keen on his scrimshaw, you see, and that makes all the more sense, given his family, I suppose. After another dose, we agreed to call it a night. I asked to see what he'd been working away at all that time. It was quite the piece, I tell you. Really very well done, but quite horrible. Like the figure of a man, but covered with a sort of set of scales. And all the eyes on the thing. Oh, and the mouth. Well, such as it was. Good Lord. Such a mouth. Most unpleasant. Really very well done, mind, but not pleasant to look at all. Gave me a very funny feeling. I told him he should change his subject matter. He might sleep the better for it. And he laughed. But I could see he was still thinking about that dream, even as he left. Rum old business. Might make for a good shaggy dog's tale. Oh, which reminds me. Must make a note of that story about Gritvik and Whaling Station. That'll be another good one for the memoirs. Oh, and I really must make a note to tell Patel to bring me up a second dinner on the long watch. I was absolutely starving tonight. No, no, that won't do at all. Log ends. Thank you. The Apocalypse Players present Trail of the Loathsome Slime, a second edition Call of Cthulhu scenario by Marcus L. Rowland, adapted for 7th edition by Joseph Chance, starring Dominic Allen as Barney Basker, the documentary maker.
No, speak slower, calmer, clearer. Can you say that all again, please? There's a lot going on.
Dan Wheeler as Johnny McCutcheon, the ornithologist.
Mr. McCutcheon, what is it that you're really passionate about?
Well, birds, nature, you know, the things that are really true. Outside of the bullshit, the human crap.
So what are you hoping to find about these penguins?
Well, look, when's this going out, huh? Is this it'll be after all this?
Almost certainly, yes.
Penguins is penguins. I don't know there's anywhere where you can see fulmars fly like this part of the Southern Ocean. The sky so wide, huh? That's what I'm excited about, the fulmars.
The fulmars?
All the gulls, really.
I see.
And, protecting this bit of habitat from those who might be thinking of using it for, adulterating it for human needs.
Do you think that's what this expedition's going to achieve? It's going to protect it?
Well...
Or will it expose it?
If I've got anything to do with it, it'll protect it.
Interesting.
Special guest starring Mark Meer as Pascal Giraud, the pilot.
Monsieur Giraud, if I may be so bold, what was it exactly that motivated you to be part of this expedition?
Like I tell you, the paycheck.
But surely there's an infinite amount of work a man of your skills could be doing. Isn't this a little underwhelming?
Sometimes you like a job that does not require, shall we say, to operate at maximum capacity, eh? I consider this a bit of a vacation from some of my usual work.
So you're on a jolly?
Yeah, I like that. A jolly, that is what I am on. A jolly.
Okay.
And special guest starring Adam Megiddo as Danny Cook, the photographer.
Mr. Cook, I find you, for the benefit of our listeners, sat in the snowmobile, simulating its movement. Is this a frequent hobby of yours?
Tell me the truth, Barney. I do love being in the driving seat. I'm not skilled. Don't get me wrong, but there's something comforting about it. I mean, check this thing out. I mean, do you actually even know how it works?
I'm afraid it's not really in my purview as a geologist, but certainly I wouldn't know the first thing about maintaining one.
No, me neither, but look at it, it's like magic, isn't it? I tell you what, I come in here for a bit of quiet sometimes, you know what I mean? Just to shut out the world and all that, and I sit here, and I don't want to leave most of the time. Think about home, you know. Long trip. Long voyage.
When you say shut out the world, are you saying that you're avoiding something at home, or you're eager to return to it?
Oh, well, ain't you one who likes to get to the questions, mate? Now, I'll tell you what, I do miss my daughter, Kathy. I do miss her. She's best decision I ever made. Best mistake I ever made. But, I mean, she still counts, you know.
How old is Kathy now?
10. 10. She's a fucking little princess, I tell you.
Good age.
Yeah. They grow up fast, mate. They grow up fast.
Indeed. Do you think Kathy will be proud of your exploits? Will you tell her everything that's happened here?
What?
Are you proud? Are you proud of what you're doing?
Guess I better do something that makes her proud, right? You know, I mean, I've taken some good snaps in my time, and some of the things in the war zones, for sure, I'm proud of. But, You know, I guess she'll like a penguin. Who doesn't love a penguin?
Is this not an underwhelming trip for you?
Oh, no, no. No, no. Any adventure's an adventure.
Very interesting.
Don't hope you don't mind me saying, you're looking a little bit pale, a little bit hungover. Are you all right?
I took some sleeping pills that didn't really agree with me in the end.
Oh, yeah. Then those legal drugs will fuck you up.
Yeah, valerian root it was, yes. It's really... They're not always effective. It upset my stomach, I think. The motion of the ship doesn't help either.
Sit in here. Just imagine you're on land.
I've climbed into the vehicle with Mr. Cook. Into the passenger seat.
And just close your eyes and imagine the sound, like the humming sound it would make as it goes over the tracks. That's it. It's like a happy place, isn't it?
With Jeannie Spark as Dr. Rosa Thomas Dalton, PhD, the researcher.
Miss Dalton, may I ask you a few questions about your time on the ship so far?
Yes, of course. Please do, Mr. Basker.
What is it that you would say you're hoping to find on this journey?
Well, not to put too fine a point on it, I'm hoping to be at the forefront of what we call, in the world of anthropology, multi-species ethnography. That's when perspectives other than the human collide with the human point of view in an anthropological... to create an anthropological archive of experience. So, obviously, the Antarctic islands are largely uninhabited with no indigenous population, and so it's really exciting to be on the forefront of coming together with the indigenous bird life population and just seeing how humans and non-humans interact in that space. Sorry, it's a long-winded way of saying I'm just really excited about the penguins.
So... Are you expecting the penguins to be frightened by us?
I don't expect they will be. It's not breeding season, so they're not competing for each other. There won't be the aggression and the fear that there will be in the breeding season. And the young, the eggs from last season will have hatched and will be on the point of leaving their parents. It's rather sweet. They breed for life and they have maximum two eggs per season, but only one gets incubated. So there is only one child per two penguins, and they'll be leaving the nest, so to speak, as we arrive. I don't expect them to be too afraid of us. They are familiar with human visitations, but it will be interesting to see how they react. I can't really predict what it'll be in advance.
How long have humans been visiting these islands, would you say?
Well, the fascinating thing is we really have no idea, because in the normal way of anthropological studies, in the Arctic, for example, you'd rely a lot on oral history. So the Inuit peoples have a lot of oral history, which can give us a sense of how long they've been in an area, as well as artefacts that would be passed down from generation to generation. In the Antarctic, of course, we don't really have that. The people of Patagonia, South America, and the southern Antarctic waters were nomadic boat people, so they may have visited, but they may not have settled. So you could say that we might be some of the very first people in the last couple of decades to visit the island at all.
Do you think this theory that the ancient Chinese already visited everywhere holds water?
Personally, it's not a school of thought that I subscribe to. I'm not meaning to discredit that as a school of thought. It's just it's not a particularly interesting or fruitful line of thought as far as I'm aware.
Perhaps if we shout a bit of Cantonese at the penguins and see how they react, we'll get a judgment, a sense of that.
Oh, well, we mustn't shout at the penguins. I am going to be very firm about that. We need to be as quiet as we can whilst we are within about 500 metres of the colony.
Ni hao, I think, is Cantonese for hello.
Yes, we won't be shouting that. And Mr. Basker, I'm very sorry. I'm not feeling very well.
Oh, have you been on the valerian root tablets as well? I also have had...
Mr. Basker, I'm terribly...
Not in here. Not in the mess. I've just cleaned this... I'll turn that recording off.
I'm terribly sorry.
Danan McAleer as Edwin Crow, the independent security contractor.
I am currently on top deck trying to record some of the bird sounds and the water. But I've just noticed that Mr. Crow is also up at this hour. It's currently 5:36 a.m. I'm going to see what he's up to. Ah, Mr. Crow, good morning.
How are you? I'm to you.
It's very early to be up on decks.
Aye. I like the mornings. Outside. Reminds you that you're not just stuck in a steel shell.
Mm. Remind us what your experience of being on ship is prior to this expedition.
Well, you know, usually going from A to B, going from A to Z, going back from B to A or Z to A. it's not a habit, but it comes with the territory.
Yes. And what would you say is your territory?
If the engineering.
Right. What do you hope is going to be... no, let me rephrase that.
Please.
Why do you... how did you get involved on this expedition?
Well, you know, got my contacts from the days. At the moment, yeah, Antarctica, it's one of the... well, it's the only continent I've not been to.
Hmm.
Via work. And I suppose you could say... Well, it's the only continent I'm not likely to encounter anyone affected by my presence there. So that's one on the checklist. You know, no need to worry about that.
Give me the impression that you had a career prior to being an engineer.
No, always an engineer.
Ah, but it's taken you all over the world.
Well, combat engineer, I suppose you could say.
Ah, I see.
But I don't like to talk about that.
Right.
That side of
no,
it.
I can imagine. Must be awful.
I mean, I can't. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't talk.
I suppose if you've seen a lot of conflict, it must be very traumatic to remember.
Well, I don't know. You tell me.
Well, I've never been in a combat situation.
No, have you not? Just like hearing about them.
Actually, I'm a geologist.
Titillating.
No, I find it appalling. For the most part.
So I appall you?
No, not at all.
And how about yourself?
Mm.
Geology?
Yes.
Interesting rocks out here, are there?
Well, we'll see, I suppose.
Tell you what, I'm from... well, I suppose you know where I'm from. Staithes. Lots of interesting rocks around there, in the old cliffs.
Oh, yeah.
Fossils and such.
Oh, I can imagine.
Everyone bangs on about the Jurassic Coast, but... there's nowhere near the number we've got up there.
Well, I didn't have you down for an amateur paleontologist, but I shall certainly look into that.
No idea what that is, so you're quite right. But
is there a part of the world that you visited that you would not want to visit again?
Do you know the answer to this?
No.
Is that the trick?
There's no trick. It's really just a question that might interest the listener.
Yes, there are.
A sense of your closer character to home. Personality.
There's places closer to home I'd prefer not to visit again. And by closer to home, I mean...
Staithes.
Within the same aisles.
Oh.
Not Staithes, no. I'm happy going back there. I was back there last year for my father's funeral, if you must know. But there's places within the British Isles I've been that I realised why I wasn't welcome. And that's all I'm going to say on that matter.
The Isle of Wight?
Yes. Let's say that. Let's say the Isle of Wight.
It's understandable. I myself had a very bad honeymoon in the Isle of Wight.
good day to you, Mr. Basker.
Oh, good day. He moved away with great pace. But he gave me one last glance over his shoulder before he went back down decks. He had a menacing glint in his eye. And also, I detect... a touch of sadness.
What did you just say?
Nothing, I was
talking
to the tape.
Right, okay.
And Joseph Chance as your keeper of the arcane lore. You had the rare opportunity to talk to the drill engineer and land surveyor, Tolliver Baines.
who'd kept very much his own counsel. You'd had a couple of basic interviews with him, but you managed to get him down in the mess the day before you arrived.
Mr. Baines, I understand that you and I may end up working quite closely together.
Yes, I'm very glad you're here. Glad that I won't be alone in the theory department. Got some good men here with practical knowledge, but and indeed, of course, the excellent doctor herself, but Dr. Norma Patterson, that is, of course. But she'll be mostly in charge of the conservation site side of things, whereas I'm interested in piercing that magma crust, as I'm sure you are too.
Indeed, and hopefully when we put our heads together, we'll find the perfect spots for that sort of thing.
Well, the FZ-19 is going to pierce that thing, and it's going to sink a borehole deeper into this rock than anything else that has been attempted up until this point.
And can you tell the listeners a little bit about what makes the FZ-19 superior to any previous drill?
Well, I don't want to bore you with the science, but we've used some of the same principles of Japanese folding metal for swords, actually, and it's proved incredibly effective using various titanium blends. It's all very complicated. What I'm personally more interested in is the thought that we could potentially, turn areas of the Antarctic into far more habitable locations using this kind of technology. It's light, it's durable, it's well suited to the cold. Machinery in this part of the world just jams up within minutes. That's why, like, the snow tracks designed for it, the helicopter, not so much. You know, you got to look after these things. You speak to Giroux, he'd be back me up on that. I think he's crazy to get into that bird, and I know he likes to. So, you know, maybe he is a bit crazy. I don't know.
And how deep do you think the FZ-19 will be able to drill?
Well, obviously, we won't be going beyond the permitted depth, but we're going to break ocean surface. There's no doubt about that because of the elevation of the island itself. That's partly why we want to do it. But it's all very controlled. There'll be no danger to the site, and there'll be no danger to the birds. Crucially, that's part of the wonder of the machinery. And I think we've got an excellent team here to back up all aspects. Proud to be part of it, conservationally speaking, in terms of resources. I think it's an excellent move, and I'm just glad that that Boston, Miskatonic, and Maine could all be part of this.
Mm. And best case scenario, what will you find?
Oh, well, I guess we'd find. Well, I mean, you're the geology man. I think the thing that would make us most excited is the connection with Gondwana. We want to be able to prove that this supercontinent had the lines that we think it had, and I think Griffin Island is going to be a key part of fixing that puzzle. You know, we'll be going back in time 200 million years. We'll be proving the drift to the north. We'll be hitting the bedrock, and yeah, I think it's about finding the lost continent, right? It's about proving Gondwana fell out the way it fell out.
Right. Yes. Good. Sorry. Can you say it again?
Gondwana.
Gondwana.
Gondwana. You know about Gondwana, right?
Continent.
I've got to go. The Dutch needs me. Yeah, Gondwana.
Well, is that Pangaea? I know about Pangaea. That's a scientific theory. But what do you say?
That sort of thing.
He left very hastily, but he looked back at me over his shoulder with a glint of madness, and perhaps also a touch of sadness.
Johnny McCutcheon and Barney Basker, you find yourselves in the lab, which has been turned swiftly into the sick bay. Various tables and desks have been cleared. Some dead bodies have been placed on them. some... one, certainly the injured figure of Dr. Patterson, is on the main actual sick bed. McCutcheon, you're being carried by Edwin Crowe because of your wounds. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you did lose 4 hit points, yeah?
I did, yeah.
So, although it's not bad, you're definitely limping and your elbow is ringing. You're not sure. You doubt that you've broken anything, but it was a tough hit. So, McCutcheon, you've been dropped off. Dr. Patricia Singh is in there working hard, being aided by the engineer, Baines, who appears to be a cool head. His sleeves are rolled up, jacket's off, he's in his shirt and jeans.
Baines, Singh, another one for you here.
Okay, sit down.
All right, once you want the time.
Yeah.
McCutcheon, you...
I'm all right.
Cuts? Have you been cut?
I don't know, just a bit of a rough landing, huh? But I think I'll be all right.
Landing? What the hell were you doing?
Well, we were trying to get round, getting the what you call it, on the bridge. Oh, trying to help out that Rothman. He was fighting off one of the... What happened to them? The man who...
I think that was that Blaithby, yeah. He's over there, and Blaithby's covered in a sheet. That was the ornithologist, who you'd had some good conversations with, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. The doc's working on it. Here, Crow, any more bodies down there?
Erickson's still down there. I'll bring him up.
You get someone to help you, right? Erickson's heavy.
Yeah, there'll be someone there.
I mean, was.
Yeah.
Could McCutcheon, could you give me a power roll? And Crow, could you give me a spot hidden?
Oh, wow, that's...
Got to roll dice.
Yeah, got to roll dice straight in, mate.
Mental.
Oh, that's an extreme success on my power. I've rolled a 0-2 on my 45 power.
0-2, sweet. Okay, right, so yeah...
This happened last time that I did it. I started really well.
Yeah, don't start, don't waste any. So you're pushing through the pain boundary, and you can make a spot hidden as well. I'll tell you what, I'll give you a bonus die for that.
Thanks. Very kind.
Was that nothing from you, Crow?
Earlier.
Oh, how good or bad is my spot hidden? One of them is almost a fumble, but it's not, and the other is a hard success.
I think with a bonus, it's always good.
Hey.
So, you see Patricia Singh, Dr. Singh, look at the body in front of her, which is actually, you realise, Niles, Tim Niles. It's his head, and the decapitated body has been brought up. Patterson's just sat off to her right. She's off to the left, and she's pulling a sheet up, but she's looking at the face of the body, and her reaction is very distinct. It's one of Eureka. She kind of goes, and you see her step back, and she just leaves the lab quite suddenly.
Well,
she's in the process of leaving the lab. Crow, you're going, but she sort of ducks in front of you, but it doesn't. You don't particularly think anything of it.
Feeling sick or something?
She's been in and out. There's a frantic sense of chaos.
Yeah, of course. In which case, I'd just make to go back to find Erickson's.
I think actually, as you say, feeling sick or something, she says, I'll be right back.
Right.
But McCutcheon, you definitely clocked this as looking at the face. There was something about looking at, particularly the mouth.
I'd quite like to go over and look at the face.
Yeah.
So the last time, I mean, partly out of sort of morbid curiosity, because the last time I saw this face, it was being held, right, by...
Yeah.
An axe-wielding maniac.
By the cook.
Yeah, so I think I just... in a way, it might ground me that really happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just going to go over and have a look at it and see if I can maybe infer what she had seen. Whether it was... Maybe it was just an expression on the face that she saw.
Have you got any medicine?
It would be good, wouldn't it? No, nothing. But I do have pretty good natural world. Not going to help, is it?
I think it would have to be an extreme natural world.
Or biology?
Yeah, I'll give you hard biology.
I will take my hard biology. You never believe it. Another 0-2 on my twin.
Hey, that's what we like.
Okay, So the edge of... There are these blue stains now. They're not... The foam, the white foam is gone, but the blue stains down the side of the mouth. I mean, it's particularly horrific in his case. But in some ways, you're more grounded by the scientific... Almost... you're reassured by the sense that there's something odd. These stains. And then right at the bottom of the drips, they look purple. You just think to yourself, you go, purpurea. And then you think, purpurea? Why would I be thinking purple? Why is that odd? The blueness is definitely very unusual. But then you start thinking, purple, is there something about that? And you think maybe that's what she's seen. Because there was no sort of sense of the darkening of the colour of it, but now it's on the skin. You're lying on the deck, Barney Basker, in the physical.
Bliss.
But in your unconscious self...
Oh.
You begin to find yourself waking at the end of a very long room. At the end of a very long table. Possibly on board a ship.
Huh?
Your head is ringing with pain.
Oh, my head.
There's an ornate... scroll decorated topped chair in quite a European style, fancy, which is directly ahead of you at the end of this. Feels like an extremely long table. Could you give me a power roll?
Yes. power. No, I failed that by 9 points.
Excellent. So you hear a voice saying,
"Oh, are you all right?"
"I'm fine. Where are you?"
"I can't see you. Will you stand up?"
I try to stand up.
You can. It hurts like heck because the whole of your head is ringing like crazy.
Oh, God.
You remember smacking your head against the side of the ship. But you can stagger to your feet.
Yeah, I grip the table and lean against it. "I can't see you."
And as you say that, things along the length of the table begin to come into focus. It's a very burnt, umber, yellow painted pair of walls that stretch away down to the end. And then you see at the far end of this, it's too long a table. It's about 50 feet long. Is sat a very large man in a rather voluminous gown. There's something off about his hair. And his hands are on the arms of the chair, like a throne. And along the sides, you see that there are empty spaces where paintings would have been hanging. They all appear to be empty. You just can see the dirt marks and the lines around where they must have been.
Mm.
Except for the two closest to him. You think it's a man. Certainly sounded like a man in the voice.
Mm.
The left one appears to be a scrawl of just mess. Has been drawn in. You can't make out what that is. But the one on the right appears to be a naval picture. A picture of a ship. What will you do, Basker?
Who are you? Have we met?
No. No, we have not met. My name is Gonzalez. My name is Alicia Gonzalez.
That ring any bells?
Roll history. It might be a... The lower the better. It might be an extreme. There is a chance in your line of work.
No. That's a 52 on my 40.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, you could push that one if you really wanted to. But at a 40, I'm not sure.
Make it. I'm not going to make it, am I?
Yeah.
I'll just remember it for later, if I can look it up.
Come closer, why don't you?
I'm going to try and sort of shuffle around the edge of the table. I don't let go of the table.
Yeah.
And I start sidling up the table.
Why are you not letting go of the table?
I'd feel like I shouldn't.
Is it because the floor's tilting?
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, then definitely I hold on tighter.
It starts tilting further and further like you're on a ship.
Ugh.
And then you're really leaning over to the right, and you hear this dreadful sound is this kind of scraping. You think you can even hear sort of things bursting and popping. Could you give me another power roll?
Fucking hell. No, 73.
You get a sensation of something vast escaping. And off to the right, you look, and the wall starts to just fall away. The yellow rots off. All those pictures where they must once have been, sort of, they almost flash as things are landing into the ocean next to you. Great fireballs coming into the ocean and leaving terrifying gouts of water and steam coming up, but you get the distinct sensation that they're still alight as they're going through the water, and you begin to feel your feet slipping out from under you. He says,
no, don't go. Why, hey, no senor, why don't you stay? Come stay. Why don't you hold my hand?
And he reaches out his hand, but his hand is really weird, and his hair starts to topple off his face, and you see that he's bald, and he's really obese. And he's reaching out his hand, and his hand, it's almost as if he wants his hand to burst out of its own size to try and reach you, but he looks like he's glued to this chair.
Oh,
could you give me one more power check?
I've got a horrible feeling about this.
Which may be your last in terms of this moment.
7. That's...
You can choose to stay and reach for his hand if you would like.
Extreme success.
Or you could give yourself unto the ocean, where you sense there may be a rising force that could bring you to the surface.
I...
Bring him up with you. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, I hurl myself into the ocean.
you plunge into this water and you're being pulled immediately out of the ship, and yet initially down, and then there's this thrusting force to push you upwards into the surface of consciousness. But as you are being pushed up, you realise that you are being propelled by something large beneath you. Even as these bolts of light and fire go into the water around you.
Can I see where they're coming from?
The sky, the stars. You did get that distinct impression before you hit the water that that's where they were coming from.
Okay.
Would you? My last question is, would you like to look below?
Yes.
In that moment, you get a keen sense of empathy with captivity. A terrifying captivity and a final break for freedom, perhaps being caused by these falling bright metal objects. Something by the stars, perhaps, is releasing something underneath. But the profound sense of wanting to be free is there in your heart. And yet, it's bittersweet because you feel this real cry right at the end of it of, help me! Help me! And then you're awake, and you're being laid down on a, not a gurney, but you're being laid down on the flat surface of the laboratory bench.
And I'm muttering, help me, help me, it's help me.
You see the beautiful face of Dr. Singh, and she says, it's all right, it's all right. I think you're all right. I think it's just a concussion. I've had a look. Can you hear me? Here, look. Look at this light, look at this light. Waves this door.
And I say, well, I know people call you the beautiful Dr. Singh, but I think you're average. I think you're distinctly average.
Well, because Roland gave her 80 appearance, so I think that's probably...
Maybe it's the concussion.
Well, the equivalent thereof. Yeah. But you're right. You're right to lambast me for my objectifying of her beauty. Absolutely right.
I mean, you have put a number on it, so I guess that's fair enough.
They put a number on it. I just translated it into our language. And that was Crow putting you down as the last of the waking bodies, but you're too busy to go back to assist. Although, Crow, you're not out of the picture, but I'm going to cut back over to Giraud and Cook. You're stood by the hold and the helicopter, respectively, but both of your backs are turned to each other. The artificer, who is not dead, Fred Simpson, is stood by you, Giraud, and his arms are folded, and he's shaking his head and clicking his tongue, going,
I don't know, mate. I don't know.
I'm telling you it can work. We jack up one side of the helicopter. We got a better chance than we do now. But first thing first, we need to crack open the armory and restrain the captain. He was coughing up that same blue shit as the others, you know? He could go crazy anytime.
You think so?
I think so, yeah. He was coughing up the blue crap like they were, so it seemed to make sense to me. I'm not Dr. Singh, but that would be my medical opinion.
Do you want me to go, or shall I work on the jacks?
You get the jacks. I will crack open the armory.
He seems hugely relieved. Hugely relieved by your suggestion.
I got, I think we got 2 assault rifles, 2 shotgun up there. Best get him into hands of people who know how to use them, eh? Hey, Cookie!
Yeah?
How are you with the gun?
Use the rifle.
Cookie, could you, as you say, do you mean the rifle? Could you roll me a power check for me? Actually, do I mean a power check? I think I mean a sanity roll. But you won't lose any sanity.
I make it.
Yeah, you were staring into the hold, and you hadn't quite realised how much you were staring into the hold until he asked you that question.
Yeah.
Because you were staring at the snow track.
Yeah. The old snow track. Yeah. Like the humming sound of the maples. It's like a happy place, isn't it? Sorry, miles away.
A gun.
Yeah. I've used a gun before. I hope to never have to use one again.
Hey, long arms? You good with the rifle?
Rifle, yeah, sure. Look, who's in charge here?
We find out who is still alive, eh? But right now, I think we count on those we think we can count on. I think I can count on you. Am I right?
All right, Frenchie, lead on.
All right, let's go. Come on.
So as you go, the quickest route is back to the fatal door that saw the beheaded head and then the masterful murders in its entranceway. And you can see a somewhat dazed-looking Rosa Thomas Dalton looking out to the beach. She's leaning on the ship's bar, ship's balcony bar, on the bar, ordering a gin and tonic.
Mademoiselle Dalton, you okay?
Yes, I'm all right. Couple of bruises, but nothing more serious than that. Are you all right?
Yeah, I think so. They don't manage to lay a glove on me.
Good.
But Erickson, he's not looking so good anymore, eh?
No, he's not, is he?
By my count, we got at least a half dozen dead, maybe more. We find out when we hit the sick bay, but...
God.
I got to ask you this. You know how to use a gun?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
It's okay. All right, we will... shit. As he sort of picks up his boot and looks at the bottom, which is probably covered in blood. These trips are not so much of a jolly anymore, eh?
No.
Giro, Cook, can you both give me a psychology roll? Regarding Rosa Thomas Dalton.
A psychology roll?
Yeah.
Yes.
That is a 93, so I'm assuming she's just fine.
Yeah. So you, Cook, you catch her doing the classic unconscious look away, and she keeps looking at the shore. And her eyes, when she looks at the shore, her eyes are even much more alive than in the conversation with you, as if she's looking for something. And she looks quite distressed.
Well, you'll be all right, love, if we go off for a minute and come back.
Yes. Sorry, I'm distracted. There should be thousands of puffins here. There are a dozen of that.
I wouldn't worry about that right now. I think we've got bigger fish to fry.
Sorry, yes, of course. I'll be all right here. Thank you.
What, you don't think a big massive ship crashing into the island is going to scare them off?
Well, it might scatter them, yes, but I can't see any further inland or further into the bay. And
maybe seeing as we're looking, what the bleeding aura is that? And I point out to those massive slime tracks.
Exactly.
shit.
So,
how
color is this? Is the slime blue? I can't remember what color it was. Is it the same color as
it? It's sort of opaque. You wouldn't necessarily say that it was a color.
Yeah, okay.
Nor would you say it's a color that could not be described as a color.
good to know. Very good to know.
Good to know.
Do you mean the trails, the slime trails? I don't. I don't know what they are.
I thought it was penguin shit.
No, penguin shit's not slimy like that. No, it hardens quite quickly, actually.
I reckon what we do is get to the armor and get the weapons, number one. Number two, find out who's in charge. See if the doctor is dealing with all the injuries properly. And then, fuck me, has anyone got a fag?
I got you. Here you go.
Fucking gentleman, mate. All right, let's get down to the weapons.
And that's not a bad idea.
As you head up towards the armory, you see Rothman and Norman Jones walking very quickly back to the what are they called? The secondary ships. What are they called? The two lifeboats.
Lifeboats.
All of my naval research has really paid off, as you can
to
see.
To the secondary ship, everyone.
To the secondary ship. To the secondary.
Good job he wasn't on the Titanic. More people would have died. Quickly, get to the secondary ships.
This is just a role-playing game.
What's he on about?
I'm losing my focus, guys. They're rushing over to the lifeboat, and you can hear this heated discussion of, that transponder's not working. It's just not working. I don't understand what's happened. And you hear Rothman going, I'm telling you, someone's got to them. Someone's got to them. They've been tampered with. And he sees the two of you, and he sees you particularly, Giraud, and he goes, Mr. Giraud, we're checking the transponders. We should be able to send a radio signal. I'm told that it's a mess. Are you securing the armory?
That's what I'm on about right now.
Good man. And Crow, right? He knows.
Crow knows what?
About the armory. Yeah, even Jones is a bit confused about this. He's going...
Does Crow have access to the armory? Do I know?
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
You're the two, other than the captain, who has access.
Okay, I know Crow and I can handle ourselves. I think Cookie know how to use a rifle, so...
Bloody hell, thank God you're here, says Rothman. And then they start stripping back the tarp. Anyone going to stay with them, or are you all going to head up to the armory?
I'm going to head up to the armory, but I'm just going a little slower than I was before, and I'm going to use a listen roll as I walk off, see if I can catch him.
Giraud just makes a beeline for the armory. He's walking ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's probably calling back, hey, Cookie, come on!
I'm coming!
give us that listen roll.
No.
So you definitely hear...
Oh, sorry, hang on. I keep getting the dice the wrong way around. A hard success.
Classic problems.
Extreme success.
Even 09. Even better, extreme. Right, so you hear Rothman saying, oh no, not this one as well. And then you can just hear as you're sort of reaching the first steps. But wait, there's one, says Jones. Oh, he's Welsh, isn't he? He's Welsh.
He ought to be.
He is now. There's one, isn't there, on the island itself, a transponder. We could possibly try and patch that in. I know there's no signal, but of course we've got the base units. And then so they're starting to have this... And obviously there is this cabin on the island. No, it was built in this century, but it was built in the sort of early 1900s, 1910s, 1905 time, kind of. And then it was renovated in the 1920s. So you don't really know much about that other than the kind of... the basic floor plan of it. The plan had been for it to be a whaling station, and it had been run by this Cumberland company. Everyone would have known this on their briefing, but it's sort of never really come up as an important thing. There was a lot of expansion around that time of trying to make the British Antarctic region, the bar, into a profitable commitment, particularly between the wars, especially with the strength of the Royal Navy. But it never kind of came to fruition. There have been a couple of mentions by Blaithby of it at dinner, and also the captain had acknowledged that it was a sort of less successful version of what they tried in South Georgia. So there you go.
I carry on then, and I catch up with Giraud.
And for argument's sake, everyone apart from McCutcheon is by the entrance to the lab. But McCutcheon, you had the opportunity to potentially... follow the doctor. You may also be at the lab, but or you may have gone somewhere else on a hunch. But McCutcheon, because of that superb spot and that little line of inquiry,
I think probably If I'm effectively left alone in the infirmary with dead bodies, no live people.
Yeah, Patterson's in there. Dr. Patterson, who's also part of your... Norma Patterson is part of your team.
Great.
You actually now technically report to her, now that Blaithby's dead. Poor Blaithby.
I might change my mind about what I'm going to do, and I might approach her and...
Yeah.
How badly injured is she? Pretty badly.
She has a very heavy... She had a very heavy cut. You saw that. No, you didn't, because you never went round the front of the ship, did you? So you never got to the bows. Her arm is very heavily bandaged and is in a sling. She has her midriff wrapped as well, where she was cut across. But you can't see that. We can see the bandaging. She looks incredibly pale, and there's spatters of blood up on her chin. She's just sort of sitting there, staring at the floor. But she does look up and says, hello. Sorry.
You all right? All right, Doctor. Any of that blood yours, or just see?
I think it's all mine. I wasn't very. And then she just looks like she's a long way off. I don't think you need to have any medical role to know that this is probably shock.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to take a look at the island before you came down here?
No. No, why?
What?
Why? And her eyes widen with fear.
What sort of size of colony were we expecting? The penguins?
Oh, what's 800,000? 900,000?
That's what I thought.
Maybe a million, if we were lucky.
Don't worry, you just rest. No, it looks like it's quite...
Yes, I think I will. And she closes her eyes, even though she's still sat up.
And now I would like to... I'd like to see if I can make my way to my cabin to see if my stuff is all there.
That was one of my most Guybrush Threepwood moments for you and me, I feel. You sure you didn't want to try your record player and the razor blade? Try and put them together? No, fair enough.
Oh, the lotus flower and the cafetiere.
you have correctly determined that that's a bit of a dead end right now. Where do you want to go again? My apologies, dear man.
I would like to go to my cabin.
Yes.
To see whether my stuff is all there.
Mm.
Because, you know, I know people have been all over this ship and a lot of them are fucking maniacs. And there's a nagging at the back of my mind. I saw that guy with a smashed up guitar. And I'm assuming it was his. I really hope it wasn't mine.
Erickson was always one for the campfire sing-along for it. But...
Yeah, he was. Yeah. So I'm hoping it was his own guitar.
You get to your room, which is in the nicer part of the ship's staterooms, and you can secure your guitar, much to your relief. The dreadnought is safe.
Excellent. What a relief.
As you're coming out, you see all of the others at the entrance to the lab. Just happens coincidentally, so that some of them look like they're about to head up towards the bridge again. And technically we are all back together again, with Basker looking on from his position, groggily, but...
Help me. Help me.
I think Dalton and Cook, you hear him say this, but Giraud, Crow, you've already kind of heard it anyway, and McCutcheon, certainly Giraud and Crow, there's a sense of agency about the whole, the armory is not yet secured, in your view. You're training from behind, you don't hear.
My current mission was to bring up the last body, right? Have I done that in this meantime, or is that still...
Let's say that you have it with you.
Great. So over my shoulders, I've got the massive,
You've got
hulking weight of Erickson.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of heading past, saying, don't worry, I've got it.
Bro.
Yeah.
Get Erickson's stash and come with me, eh?
Yeah. Giraud, you going to armory?
That's my plan.
Right.
And somebody, get the captain in restraints now.
Yeah.
He was coughing up that same crap.
Where is it?
So he's on the other side of the lab and is technically not restrained.
Ah, right. Fuck this. I shoulder down the body.
Yeah.
It's dead. This is more important. Right, let's get him in cuffs or let's get him tied.
So, Crow, you go over. Could you give me a... do you have medicine?
Let me have a look. Shouldn't I? Got a...
You do? I think you've got first aid.
No, I don't think I do. First aid is all right, but yeah.
Could you give me... there's a chance. You've an extreme chance of spotting something about...
With medicine?
With first aid. Extreme.
Oh, with first aid. Okay, great.
To be fair.
68. Nah. Not seeing it.
Yeah, he's really groggy, and you notice that he has got a little trail from his nose, a little trail of blue, but no foam. And he's sort of
from the yellow bantings.
There's blood on his forehead,
yeah,
and a nasty mark on his neck, which looks like it might have been where he hit the metal of the ship.
So he's on the opposite side of the lab to us.
He's on the opposite side of the lab to you and Dr. Patterson, and therefore Basker.
Yeah,
as well. Basker's close to the door.
Right.
And then there's all of the dead bodies in between, laid out in various poses and positions.
Of course. Here, Cap. How you feeling, mate? You all right?
he's not making any attempts to reply.
I think you need a sleep. And I'm going to start... I've shouldered Erickson's body onto the floor. I'm going to start moving towards him very slowly.
Oh, yeah, I was assuming that you were right up by him.
Oh, great. I'm giving,
giving you the caution. Yeah, yeah. I'm giving you the caution aspect.
Thank you.
Did you have anything to restrain him with, or is this a case of improvising?
No. I was thinking I'd probably... Unless there's anything nearby, the rubber tube attached to the end of a Bunsen burner.
You could use a number of improvised items. Roll your artificing skill. You could use clothes and things to tie him on, because he is on an actual gurney, because he's a living person.
Yes.
Incapacitated.
Question.
Yes.
Would I know where maybe some gaffers or duct tape might be?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Various good lockers for that sort of stuff. There's definitely some on the bridge, and there's definitely some here in the lab.
I just rolled an 8.
Yeah, you could potentially... That's a good suggestion, is that you sort of start getting some of that stuff. Maybe Giraud... Now you said it. You step in, throw open a cupboard, and throw one of these things... As you are thinking the same query, you're kind of going, there's that. And so there's a filmic catch.
Yeah. Hey, heads up. You deal with him, meet me on the bridge, eh?
Got ya.
Basker, you were able to get up. You lost, I think you only actually lost one hit point in that.
Yes, I did, yeah.
Knocking unconscious.
Did I? Hang on. Let's have a look. Hit points. No, I haven't lost any. Was I meant to have lost one?
I think let's say you lost one.
Maybe this
in the knocking out.
I've got one. I've lost one sanity for sure, haven't I?
Yes, you've. I've got you marked down as minus one.
Saved,
but nobody else apparently has lost sanity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that goes.
Yeah, let's see how that goes.
Well, I've caught the package from Pascal, and I assume it's rubber Bunsen burner tubing or bandaging.
Oh, it's I threw you duct tape.
Oh, it was tape. It was tape. Great.
Yeah. So you secure the captain pretty ably, actually, with that.
Yeah.
Don't get too close to his face. Don't touch the blue stuff.
Right. Never touch the blue stuff.
Just keep back from his face. We don't know what that is yet. It's some sort of contagion, but...
Right, yeah.
Be cautious, Crow.
I shall.
Should we all be wearing masks, or is that just bullshit spread by the government?
No, I think if it was airborne, we'd all be sick by now. I think it's contact touch, but just be careful around the sick.
But of course, yeah.
I think of something as well. The cook. Maybe we don't touch any of the food in the kitchen that is not sealed, eh?
That's a very good idea, Mr. Giraud.
Yeah. All of you think back to the cook. In that moment, who loved to show off about his
Eastern,
ex-wife's recipes,
Eastern infused,
and he kept on piling on these Eastern European dishes. And they were always good, but it did become a bit of a thing that you were kind of every now and then you would sort of crave a little bit of good old fashioned Canadian or English home cooking.
And we all had a different meal to the rest of the crew last night.
You sat at the captain's table, as is traditional.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
Wait, are you asking a question, McCutcheon, of me, the keeper of Griffin Island and the British Antarctic Territories? Or are you...
Well,
were you rolling an idea check?
I think I was thinking. I was thinking out loud.
Mm.
Did we? How did you know that? I'm not sure. Did I fall asleep in the last session?
Once, maybe twice. Narcolepsy.
Yeah, I remember that. That jogs my memory. I say, oh yeah, the borscht. I was looking forward to the borscht with those fresh rye bread rolls, but
goulash.
Yeah, you
know. That's right. I mean, the goulash was.
Help me.
Goulash was.
Oh hey,
delicious. But
Basker, you all right?
In the water. There's something in the water. Something huge. It's trying to escape. It wants to be free. I was nearly free.
Dr. Singh.
There's a man.
Dr. Singh, I think this man needs some help.
No, no, get off me, get off me. Get the recording device.
Give him some, a bit of valerian root or something.
Click,
that'll
click,
sort him out.
Alicia Gonzalez. Who is Alicia Gonzalez? Check the records. Check the records. Oh.
The football player?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Argentina.
Yeah.
Centre forward. Aggressive.
Yeah, and Sevilla.
Was he fat? Was he a big fat chap?
No.
I was kidding, but...
So, could everybody apart from Basker give me a psychology roll?
Psychology?
Yeah. But what good it'll do.
I've had an awful dream.
Oh!
Nope.
I got a 16 on a 30.
That's an 82 on a 28. Or no, eight, yeah, nope.
Nothing from Cook.
31 on a 55.
Nothing... I'm not far off, but my luck is so bad, I'm not going to spend any.
So, two passes. One hard... Not quite a hard crow. Was it 16 on 30 or something?
It was 6, but I could spend one luck to make it hard.
Well, no, don't. It's more that you realise that he's never spoken like this before.
Right.
And, you know, he's been in some unusual states. He's perhaps unlike some others on board ship. He's not as much of a closed book. And you've seen various sort of styles of holding forth. But this is a different version of Basker, and when he says, I had a dream, the two of you, Dalton and Crow, Thomas Dalton and Crow, you really think he's being absolutely genuine, and it has seriously affected him. You were initially thinking, is he crazed? And then you're thinking, no, he's not crazed, he's just deeply affected.
He'd gleaned something.
Is this when you were knocked out, Mr. Basker?
I was knocked out?
Oh dear.
Yes,
you were.
Yes, I was.
Not for long, but yes, you did lose consciousness briefly, I think.
That makes sense. I had a terrible headache in the dream. There was a very corpulent figure, gave his name as Alicia Gonzalez. I didn't know who that was, but he wanted me to take his hand. But the wall fell away, you see, and the sea, and there was fire coming down from the stars, and I knew that only if I leapt into the sea would I be free, And sure enough, something terrible and massive was rising up out of the sea, propelling me into the air, to freedom. And now it was just a dream. It was just a dream. But...
Well, I tell you, Basker, there's nothing like hearing about somebody else's dream. You know, always very interesting.
Pretty illuminating.
How are you feeling? You feeling a little phlegmy or anything?
No, I feel fine. I feel just a headache, and I want to get off this fucking ship!
I had an experience a bit like the one you just described in a Vondelpark in Amsterdam. Best mushrooms I ever took.
No, where's the valerian? I need some valerian. Get up.
I think I turn to Rosa and say, I'll leave him with you. I need to get Ericsson up there, and then I'll meet you at the armory, Pascal.
All right, we see you there. Cookie, come with me, come on.
Yeah, I'm right behind you.
I shoulder the body and head up to... leave it with the rest of the ill or dead.
I'm going through the drawers looking for valerian tablets.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Crow, it's a moment's work. So you're right behind Giraud and Cook, leaving Basker, McCutcheon and Dalton, Thomas Dalton down... Rosa Thomas Dalton, down in the lab.
Right, so I've rejoined them, basically. I've shouldered them up the last set of stairs and dashed down to rejoin them.
Oh, I was saying that you were basically on the same level as the lab. It's just you hadn't got him. Basically, you get him onto a table.
Right.
Well, in fact, actually, there's probably no table left, so you just lie him next to a table. Slick blood on the floor. You know, that's why you've gone to the lab, because it can all be washed down.
Next to our captain, who's sort of gaffered up. Yeah.
Exactly. It's carnage. It's chaos. All those dead.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, while Crow is doing this, I will come in. I will fish around in Erickson's pockets till I find his set of keys.
Good shout.
Nice. Good thinking. Cut back. So, Cook, that does leave you an opportunity on the stairs if you did want to do anything while these two are...
What's around me on the stairs?
Well, it's just the stairs up to the bridge and the fateful radio room. I mean, you've been there.
No, I don't think so. No, I'm just going to get to the armory.
Yeah. Do you wait for them, though?
Sorry, wait for who?
Giro. It's a moment, but Giro and Crow are downstairs in the lab sorting a few things out.
Oh.
And it's just the stairs straight up to the bridge.
I'll wait for them and I'm just going to have that fag.
Yeah. Nice. Perfect.
I'm checking on my camera equipment's still okay, which I'm...
Well, there is a porthole there, actually, and you can see there's this the glint of the sun on those trails, and you see how sort of erratic they're not. You wouldn't say they're the same thickness. You wouldn't say they sort of go down. They're not conveniently going to the shore and then back up again. They sort of crisscross and thread, and some are wide, disturbingly wide. Some quite narrow.
Very, very strange.
And you can see these mournful-looking little dots of creatures moving, which are the penguins, those few penguins that remain.
I mean, I have a chemistry skill. Is there anything I should roll?
At this distance, there's no way you could... No, you've never seen anything like it. That's what you know from your chemistry. But you'd have to get... What you know from that is... That thought is... It'd have to be up close.
Yeah.
Probably take a sample.
Some good...
You'd need the snow track, wouldn't you?
Definitely.
Matter of moments to get the crane down, winch it up, winch it out. That's what it's there for.
Great idea I just had there.
And then they're with you. So, Giro, you see a moist-eyed-looking cook. He's got his camera, and you think, oh, he's just got a great shot through the window, perhaps. Well, maybe you think something else.
We get the snow track out there. We can get up close.
Get up close to what?
To them weird tracks.
Okay, well, that is a problem for the next minute after this one, where we go to the armory.
Yeah, I'm right behind you.
So, Crow, you hear him say weird tracks, and you look out of the window. It's one of these sort of, you know, it's only about a foot and a half across, but you see glistening in the Antarctic sun, for it is summer, even though it's about 1 degree out there. You see these weird, wide, glistening slime trails crisscrossing the sort of low, dense, heathery-looking rockland that leads to a pebbly, mixed beach. And it's on the beach as well, and it's on the rocks. And you can see it. Very strange. Never seen anything like it.
Jesus Christ. I've never seen anything like that.
Talk about my dreams much. Do you ever dream about the future, Sleep? Have you ever had a premonition, a presentiment? I can't tell you how I know. All I ever dream about is the past, right? But this was a dream about something that will be. Something wonderful. Something awful. there was this magnificent metal ship. It was beautiful and strange. And these people, they were like humans, but not like us. They were different. Dressed in these tunics and leggings and wonderful coats and colours. But there was this woman on deck. A woman. The first woman I have seen in months. And she had this red hair, this short red hair, like a man's. And this will sound so strange. She was like a man and a woman all at once. And she wore these close-fitting clothes, you know. And they were so different to anything. But it was so real. She stepped forward to the rail and she had this black box in her hand. She was looking out over the ocean and she spoke into the box and the box captured her voice. It captured it. I can't explain how, Sleep, but I knew it. But have you ever written music in your dreams? Because I heard this, like music. I knew all this, like that music in my dream. I knew the tune of it, though I'd never heard it before in my life. And this tune, it was beautiful, but it made me ill at ease. It was discordant, you know? But still beautiful. Well, she was beautiful. and the ship was wonderous. And there was a Canadian there, a French Canadian, and he had command of a different kind of ship. I mean, it was an orb with giant whirling propellers atop it. And the orb was on the deck of this giant ship at first, but then it rose up and hovered in the air. It was an airship, and it was so fast. And he was so reckless. And there was a man there with... I think it was a camera, but it was nothing like the machines we have. This fitted in one hand, and he used it the way one might use a pistol, almost. And the pictures he was taking, I knew those pictures were wonderful. And the strangest thing was that I knew that they were all on an expedition of some kind, together. I knew, and I can't say how I knew, but I knew they were on their way to Griffin Island. I knew it so clearly. And then the men and the women on that ship, they began to fight each other. Some of them had been poisoned, deliberately corrupted. There were these bright, sunny, sea-blue lines running through them, out of them, foaming out of their mouths, and they began to rage. This woman, the woman with the short red hair, she fired a pink missile at them. And this was all out of sequence, but also the music of it made sense to me. It was all happening, and it will all happen, John Sleep. I swear it. And then there was a name. Not a name that humans speak. It was right on the edge of knowing. Do you think that's what Erskine feels like? As if he's at the edge of understanding the map within the map? I don't know, it was something old and strange, but known. And right at the end, just before I woke, I saw one of the men on board. A sailor, like us, but not like us. You know, he was different. He knew the name. Dagon. The name was Dagon, and he worshipped it. A memory of it. But he had this blade, this dagger made of bone, made of a beast, and it was the colour of a deep blue into purple, into something awful outside of colour. And he kept it a secret. he was the one who was orchestrating this madness, or attempting to, or losing control of it deliberately to raise up an energy, a cost, and a payment to something high and something strange. This rage. They fell on each other in their rage, tearing clothes and tearing flesh. And I knew that this sailor had started it all. He'd started it by murdering a man. A doctor. A man of the mind. A dreamer. And he was a sacrifice. It was evident to me. The sacrificial lamb was the dreamer. This was the future. And I don't know how I know, but I can... I fell into killing each other on the way here. The way to Griffin Island. It was so horrible. I've seen people die. I've seen men killed before. I've seen men smashed against rocks. I've seen a man shot in the head. I've fought and I've hurt men. But this rage. You know that moment before? People die. And you can never have that moment back because you don't know that it's going to happen. But that is what I felt. That's what I felt.